My talk will be based on the concept and process of constructing a museum within a zoo. It will focus on my recent work, as Vera indicated, The Final Sleep, Le Dernier Sommeil, at the Royal Ontario Museum's Institute of Contemporary Culture. In addition to the exhibition, an accompanying bookwork was produced, and Vera showed that to you, and it's also titled The Final Sleep. I worked for a year researching and presenting this installation. The work involved selecting 400 objects from 10 million items in Rouen's historic collections. It was a great honor to be invited into the back rooms and to explore the Rouen's vast holders. I will begin by presenting a video of The Final Sleep. It was co-produced by the Royal Ontario Museum in partnership with the Discovery Channel. The producer, Julia Seegers, is the co-annotator in this film. So you can let it know. Thank you.
Graceful trumpeter swans lying in a state of repose were collected in 1873 and have probably been behind closed doors ever since. The same goes for this diverse collection of fish dating back to the late 19th century. Even the jars therein are so old they're artifacts in themselves. This is not a usual museum exhibit. For the most part, this show, entitled The Final Sleep, is comprised of specimens usually confined to labs and storerooms. Used for scientific research and have never been on public display. The Final Sleep also does something that other museum exhibits don't. The show leaves it up to the individual to draw their own conclusions about the artifacts. Other than the scientific labels on each item, you won't find any accompanying text. There is no voice of authority here. These dog skulls, for example, can be admired simply because their architecture is stunning. Elizabeth McClune is the curator of this show.
So I think also by not pressing the scientific upon them, they look at the spiritual. And they look at these other aspects of it that you want to look at when you see these things, that is the human dimension. So they put themselves into the picture more.
For the most part, when they're studying animals in a museum, they have to be dead. Archaeologists face a similar problem. When they're excavating a site, they're effectively destroying it. So in a museum like this one, it's essentially a mass grave of tens of thousands of dead things. This is an intriguing starting point for an artistic statement that examines the notion of death in a museum.
What I've tried to do here at the Rouen is create a museum within a museum. I want all my references to go back into the idea of museological study, how things come to be collected, and to reflect on really the condition of the collection.
The Final Sleep is the creation of Canadian artist Spring Herbert, who had unrestricted access to the museum's collections when she assembled her exhibit. She talks about it having a central theme of undoing scientific specimens presented without any explanations.
Yeah, I see the Royal Ontario Museum as a cultural mausoleum. Things in the collection have been prepared in such a way where they haven't apologized in the study collection. They haven't apologized for the death of a specimen. It's just lying in state. It's stuffed with cotton batten. Their eye slits don't have glass eyes. They're just open slits with cotton batten showing through. So you have the whole sense of the specimen as a research specimen, not dressed up and animated. And I really like that acknowledgement, just pure acknowledgement that it's resting and it was never really prepared for public consumption.
The older specimens are indicative of a bygone era in museum history. With the exception of private donations, museum scientists were largely responsible for establishing their own study collections. Take the anthropology department, for example.
They went out and bagged the stuff because that was how scientific research was done. I think now there's conservation issues and extinction issues that are starting to be addressed. And by and large now, what happens is they get birds that fly into buildings, you know, that die from hazards as a consequence of disasters. So they're not avidly going out and bagging exotic birds now, from what I understand. So it's really the chronicling of a history of a time and place when that type of attitude was part of museological practice. And so I'm just reflecting all of those differences.
Many departments from the museum are well represented here. Specimens from ornithology lie side by side with selections like these rare 3,000-year-old mummified cats from Egypt. There are also several items on loan from the Bata Shoe Museum. Even though the artifacts vary dramatically, the common theme lies in their color, or lack thereof. Everything Herbert has placed in these cabinets is white or extremely pale. She says that this ensures equality throughout the exhibit. You won't find any showcase piece here, and she doesn't want the public to.
But they could see that there was no hierarchy here, that they could go and regard a very humble Albanian robin with the same reverence as a 2,000-year-old cat mummy, and that they could appreciate them intrinsically for what each one was, and that they weren't running around looking for the most valuable, the most rarefied thing, but that they were able to regard everything with a kind of personal interest, you know, because it's all displayed in an equal way.
A simple yet poignant statement that in our final sleep, we are all equal.
Firsts involved with this project. First, I have already worked in the Natural History and Anthropology Museum, and the Royal Engineering Museum had never done an extensive intervention with a contemporary artist who worked directly with the collections. So we had to learn about museum practices, and they, in turn, had to learn about contemporary art practices. It was quite a learning curve for both of us. For example, I did not know what I was going to do with the collections initially. While department heads, curators, and collections officers wrote and asked, what did I want to see exactly? I had to say, I don't know exactly. Each department had to accommodate my need to explore the general contents of a particular collection in order for me to develop a concept. Department personally needed to keep an openness. I, on the other hand, had to be open with different departments and involve the staff with our making process. It works both ways. The introductory panel at my installation of Final Sleep at the Wrong Red. This installation at the museum itself constitutes a final resting place for specimens and artifacts that have achieved an immortality of sorts in their conservation and classification. The final sleep, however, there is no chronology, no hierarchy, and no illusion of life. All things are equal in repose. This slide shows a trumpeter swan and a reed swan study scheme from the scientific research collection. The early study scheme specimens were preserved partially in arsenic. No pretense was ever made to the study scheme's work like. Only one animated taxidermied rabbit was planted in the show. The world was concerned about the public perception of so many scientific specimens on display at once, but to their credit, they promoted their inclusion. Most museological presentations of natural history in the Americas are dealing with illusion, trying to animate the departed. The forest moves away from the museum as an illusion of life towards the idea of the museum as a cultural mausoleum. The layout of the cases is intentionally symmetrical and balanced. The public proceeds to the rows of old Walmart display cases regarding objects that were actually all very carefully laid out in state on the black velvet. The curator referred to my museum as a city of the dead. It memorializes the collection. It places significance on the once living, and it commemorates their death. These are feathered high heels from the Battersea Museum, circa the 1960s. Delicate, ephemeral, and erotic, surrounded by swallows' nests. In planning my final sleep, I kept to one mantra, one case, one idea. This vitrine houses 100 bird skulls, mostly North American species. The skulls shown here include owls, shorebirds, ducks, swans, cranes, and hummingbirds. I work with a team of dedicated people at the Rhine. I honor their commitment. They stuck by me. Support for an endeavor such as this, in principle, must come from the top, the director, the head of exhibitions and marketing, all need to really play a part in furthering the vision of the museum in the process of reinventing itself. My goal was to enable the viewer to engage on an intellectual level as well as on an internal level with the specimens and artifacts within the confines of an institution. I do not want to have the viewer feel overwhelmed by information, but rather to have the audience draw their own conclusions. I believe the public is inherently intelligent. The public proved time and time again to be insightful. By and large, they understood the concept of the show. When I visited the installation in an anonymous fashion, I observed young and old looking, laughing at times, and falling silent. This is a table display of albino birds, which are lying in repose. Out of the 160,000 study skins in the ornithology department, only about 40 are complete albino. These birds included a white albino peacock right in the middle, albino ring-necked pheasant, American albino crow, house sparrows, European starlings, and barn swallows. This monochromatic landscape unifies the objects. Everything in this installation has equal significance. And this is a hermaphrodite evening grosbeak from the Nature Museum in Ottawa. Hermaphrodite birds are quite exceptional and extremely rare. This tiny hermaphrodite bird on the left side is half female with its soft brown feathers and female genitalia. The right side of the bird has yellow plumage with male genitalia. Out of the tens of thousands of birds in the Rhine's collection, not one is a hermaphrodite. Here we see albino porcupines blindly facing one another. This is coprolite. It is the oldest object in this exhibition. It's 50 million years old. Coprolite is fossilized dung. Here is a line of albino mammals. From the bottom of the slide, we have two mice, one chipmunk, and lastly, four squirrels. Scientific labeling was used to identify each object in the show in order to make my museum an extension of the ROM. In addition to the natural history departments, I drew upon textiles. A white linen Korean mourning hat was displayed beside a white Scottish wedding veil. White in some cultures signifies death. Several pairs of white leather shoes from both the ROM and the Bata Shoe Museum were included. My own personal collection of infant button-up boots, which you can see in the foreground, antique baby bottles, silver nipple shields, 1950s transparent lucite high heels, and a cream bullet bra were added to support aspects of the domestic history absent in the ROM's holdings. These embalming bottles contain fluids that promise a lifelike appearance for the deceased. Some of the bottles date from the 1940s and were produced by the Egyptian Chemical Company in Boston. The practice of preserving the dead still continues. The skull of a marmoset monkey is in the foreground, and behind it is the headless skeleton of a gray gibbon. Here, a taxidermied rabbit looks in wonder at his study-skinned comrade. These specimens, for the most part, lived, died, and were inducted into the museum collection long before we were born. They will continue a timeless sleep in the collections long after we are dead. Okay, thank you. I just want to wrap up with my final with a final project that I had done at the Power Plant Contemporary Art Gallery. This is the corridor leading to my installation La Somnolence at the Power Plant Art Gallery. At the end of the hall is a child's white beaded funeral wreath, French, late 19th century. When the viewer turns the corner and enters the room, row after row of French and Canadian wrought iron beds from the 1880s to the 1920s appear. They are a product of late 19th century mass production. Every one of these beds has a private history, but I have arranged them in an institutional setting. The private and public have become one. These are grave enclosures in a cemetery in the south of France. My recent installation titled Le Jardin du Sommeil, The Garden of Sleep, was shown in the north of Paris at Parc de la Conuve. 100 antique French wrought iron and cast iron children's beds were collected from all over France. It is evident that the human body determined the shape of these beds. The artisans who made the cribs on the assembly line were the same ones who made the grave enclosures. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Spring.